Hi, and welcome to this discussion of the Advanced Higher Classical Studies topic, Comedy, Satire and Society. I'm Andy McKellar, I'm the PA for the subject, and today I'm in discussion with Lee Baker, and we're going to try and probe into some of these texts, look at different ways in which you can address the aspects in order to meet the standards for examination.
Okay, so Andy, I think I'm going to ask you to start with by, could you summarise initially what the option Comedy, Satire and Society is actually about?
Well, my feeling is it's exploring this genre that is maybe not well understood by people in schools initially, but it's actually a way of examining society, which is perhaps a way we don't normally think of using literature. We often think about studying characters and plots and things like that. But in fact, these bits of literature were ways in which the ancients examined their own society. And by looking at things that were ridiculous and possibly even horrifying and making jokes about it, it would draw to the attention of the general public things they should be thinking about and be concerned about. And perhaps not using the sort of medium of humour would not make it as accessible. So I think it's a really important genre for young people to become aware of as a way of noticing what's going on in their society.
I think that's a really interesting take on it, because people today, comedy's changed so much, hasn't it? Because people, you know, the word woke is bandied about so much.
Yeah.
I mean, people would be horrified if the comedy of Aristophanes was on our television sets or on our radio today because of that. Do you think that makes it, studying this option, is particularly useful for a young person in school today? Or do you think it's just something that's just an aspect of classical studies to enjoy for what it is?
I think it's exceptionally useful. And I think it's very much misunderstood. The comedies of Aristophanes, I think, are a brilliant place to start in the discussion. They are so ridiculous in so many ways and just downright rude in so many ways, that you can often miss the fact that they are making some really profound observations about what is troubling their democracy and the state of their country that they're in. I mean, most of the plays that we're looking at are focused within a very concentrated time period during a very destructive war. And they highlight the ways in which the politics within their society is corrupted and is harming essentially the population by driving them into very unproductive situations in the war effort, I think.
I think it would be worth just maybe clarifying for people what that time period is exactly that we're dealing with Aristophanes, because you spoke about the democracy. My understanding was that the democracy in Athens is, you know, somewhere, something that everybody can take part in.
Mm-hmm.
And then is that what comes across in these texts, or is it a bit more complicated than that?
It certainly seems to come across as more complicated. One of the fascinating things with the ancient world is that our range of sources is always a ragtag bunch. And in fact, these comedies can be the best sources we have for understanding what was really going on within the city itself. So this time period, it's a very concentrated one. Apart from Assembly Women, which is fairly late and is about maybe 30 years after, the other plays we study, they're all within a period of about 5 years, centred around some really pivotal points of the war itself, and also incorporating what was a hopeful peace at one point, which is celebrated in the play Peace itself. But they're dominated by criticism of the leaders of the Assembly itself, because on the face of it, as you say, the Assembly is supposed to give everyone a voice. But what's coming across is that the Assembly is manipulated by different leaders within it who are vying for power in some ways.
So we can see from Aristophanes, this playwright making a direct poke at the political leaders in Athens that he was aware of and he saw on a daily or sort of monthly basis in the Assembly. That's quite a dangerous game.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that is one of the things that, although we know Athens was in such a tumultuous sort of situation within the world of politics at the time, it does show that in a lot of ways it was a healthy democracy, because it was possible to criticise people in power very prominently. And Aristophanes wasn't strung up for it. We know that, you know, he continued to write and work for many, many years afterwards. As I said, Assemblywomen is a play that he'd wrote, and it was 30 years later. So clearly he could do this. He could actually make very pointed attacks on the leaders of the country. And who knows how the people responded? That's the reality of it. But the democracy prevailed right through the war, and ultimately it's the war that's kind of changed the democracy itself. It wasn't the fact that people were criticising it. If anything, that probably made it more vibrant and led to productive change, perhaps.
Gosh, what a great thing to be able to look at from the point of view from being so far removed. And you could even compare it, couldn't you, with media like Twitter or X, how people can have this direct input criticising, which is a bit different to the Roman style of satire that the other two authors in the course look at. Do you think that Aristophanes has influenced these characters, or are they doing their own unique thing with, when we move to, let's say, Juvenal and Horace and the other aspects there?
I think they pick up on the same sort of ideas, and they're the aspects that we sort of pulled out as things to focus on when we're asking our questions in the exam situation as well. These ideas of ambition among ruling classes, that is something that is still very prominent in the works of Horace and Juvenal. So the political ambition, the social climbing, the sort of misuse of power by the wealthy, as opposed to the less empowered within society. And they also pick up this notion of trying to live a more simple life, a more frugal life. I think one of the interesting things that the Roman satirists bring into the examination is the focus on the individual, where Aristophanes is really talking about the political situation within the city itself. Horace and Juvenal, while they do that, they also are really starting to focus on a sort of personal happiness, personal contentment, what we term the quest for the peace of mind in the sort of aspects of study that we have. They bring out this notion that desire for power and for wealth and for luxury, it's not only destabilizing and destructive for those around you, it's also probably destabilizing and destructive for yourself. And I think they explore so well in their examples why and how that is the fact. One more thing that's very different about them, I think, compared to Aristophanes, is that when they're writing within essentially a dictatorial regime, they have to take different approaches. So Horace's satires are very gentle, and he does suggest that he prefers that approach because he thinks in a way that less conflict means people perhaps will listen more to your message and won't be so defensive. But he also, of course, is kind of unable to blatantly criticise the regime that he's living in. And then in Juvenal's time, it's an even more extreme dictator that's in charge, really, when he is writing. And so it's very biting satire. It's like a really extreme newspaper opinion piece in a lot of ways, obviously done in lovely poetry, but he can only really bring up examples from sort of fantasy figures, either from the past or perhaps from mythology, but he can't directly criticise the people that presumably he thought his audience would be thinking of.
Yes, so gosh, there's so much in there we could unpack. One of the ways I like to think of Horace is we never really get to the real Horace.
Yeah.
He's in the pockets of his patron, Maecenas, and who is very powerful and, you know, got a very strong relationship with the Octavian and then Augustus. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about the quest for peace of mind, there is some significant irony in it. It's fine to talk about peace of mind and don't worry about wealth when you are sitting on your lovely big estate that's been
course,
given to you. You know, what do they say? People who tell you don't worry about money have never had to worry about money. So, yeah, I think quite good lessons for young people to think about from that, in terms of trying to identify people within life who maybe don't have the same life experience that you might have or that those around you might have, and how it is that we can step back and view that from a distance.
Yeah, well, that's a fascinating take. Mm-hmm. I really like that idea. Yeah, there's so many examples, I suppose, isn't there? Such a range of different ideas. I particularly like in Horace's second book of satires, he gets really quite creative with sort of trying different ways of getting people to really think about, or not only others, but themselves as well. He has the Saturnalia poem where The slave Davis will actually criticise him and kind of force him, right, think about your own level of hypocrisy. And of course, there's the spoof on Ulysses going into the underworld and speaking to Tiresias. And the wisdom from beyond the grave is actually something that he wants you to think about. You know, is this really what we see as sort of divinely inspired wisdom?
Yeah, he's a very, very clever man. He's able to do all this, as you say, with just lines of poetry that get us to really question. Juvenal, how far do you think, and I suppose this is something that could be considered for examination as well, how far do you feel that Juvenal's emotion limits his satirical ability?
I think that's a really, really interesting question. I think if I met Juvenal, I wouldn't like him. But I love the ideas you can get from really studying him closely, because he clearly is raging against the society that he lives in. And he is annoyed at things that it seems legitimate to be annoyed about. But there's also an awful lot of intolerance that is kind of displayed in the way he writes as well. And I think maybe more than any of the others, Juvenal is a message for trying to live in a kind of vibrant contemporary society that we live in, that you're going to be dissatisfied with aspects of life, but just throwing around and blaming anyone who's different from you, or simply assuming that because people behave in a different way now than they did 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that's automatically bad. I think these are really important things for us to consider. And Juvenal, by being that guy, by being that sort of angry reactionary, helps us to consider those. You know, there may be some things we agree with them, but we must be aware of not agreeing with everything.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You can almost identify people in your own life who are on the same path as Juvenal, become so embittered by the process, and you think, if as soon as you start to feel like that, then maybe it's time to take a step back or change your path.
Yes, absolutely. Can we maybe turn a little bit to thinking about the ways in which we might address questions for an exam paper? Just kind of, because, I mean, obviously we could explore the themes of these authors all day. The importance, I think, when we're thinking about understanding standards, understanding what we're looking for, is to consider the broad sweep of the messages from these different authors, but that it's important that, as a classical studies approach, that you try to make sure you're finding specific examples of the things they say, so that you can concretely explore the ideas that they're actually delving into. And remember, our analysis and our evaluation points are not just looking for superficial comments. That gets you to the stage of sort of, okay, you've made a point, but in order to get the higher marks that we're looking at in advanced higher, you need to be exploring, right? Okay, that's the basic idea, but let's look at the way he explores that with this example, and then let's consider how that deepens our understanding of his point. So I think as we kind of leave our discussion of these guys for now, it's important to think about that. There's so much going on in these texts, because there's so many ideas, that it's important, I think, for pupils to appreciate, get yourself some concrete examples that you can discuss, whether it's for the essays or whether it's for the analysis and evaluation areas. Okay, so you can really show you understand where these judgments can come from.
Yeah, I think that's really sage advice. It's almost like arm yourself to justify yourself, isn't it? If you were sitting with somebody face to face, you go, here's an example of where this happens. Here's an example of where this happens. And that's quite empowering, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so, yeah, it should give you confidence, I think, that, you know, you have depth to what you've got to say now.
Great. I think that's really good advice for Andy tackling this paper.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Lee. That was a fascinating discussion. Join us again, please, as we will discuss other topics in the Advanced Higher course.